From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. As always, with Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine, and there is basically chaos in the NCAA right now. Power 5 football, will they play, will they not play? The Big Ten's not playing, but the Big Ten might play. We're not really sure where the world stands, so we're going to try and break down as much as we can with regards to Syracuse football and the ACC, as well as a national landscape, and just try and see where we can take this right now. And then later on in the episode, we'll look into the ACC schedule release, how that impacts Syracuse, some of the big games, big names to look out for in those matchups. But then there's a lot going on. And as we record, we hope that nothing too crazy breaks, but we will be scrolling Twitter, see if there's anything that happens in terms of news with the Big Ten, with the ACC, any sort of big news. Seconds ago, we just saw that UMass canceled its season. So as we record, anything could happen. We're going to try and stay on our toes. Maybe we have to audible. I know we've already audibled once or twice, trying to stay on top of everything and make sure that we keep you guys up to date. And if you need any more info, follow us on Twitter, Ostrom Avenue Pod over there. And we'll try and keep you with as informed with our thoughts on there, and tweet any questions you have, see what research we can do to try and answer anything, because I know we have a lot of questions. I'm sure you guys have a lot of questions. Ben, it's a lot of fun to be able to talk right now, because we really have no idea what could happen in the next 30 to 40 minutes while we're recording.
Yeah, after a couple weeks of, or not a couple weeks, a couple months of very little news, this is a lot of news we've had in the last couple days. And I think it's honestly a little bit crazy where we are right now, considering where we were maybe even just 24 hours ago. Mm-hmm. People were reporting that the Big Ten had already voted to cancel its season, that the Pac-12 was going to follow, and perhaps the rest of the Power Five. And now today, the Big Ten still hasn't officially voted. Neither has the Pac-12. And the other three Power Five conferences, you know, we're not for sure, but they look like they want to play, especially the SEC and ACC. I know CBS Sports and Sports Illustrated have reported that it looks like the ACC is going to play. So honestly, you know, I think I'm cautiously optimistic as a fan. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're going to get into some of the bigger implications and whether this is truly a good idea or not. But yeah, just a crazy day. I think if you're a college football fan in general, the amount of uncertainty, and I know one of our colleagues at WAER, Ian Unsworth, I was talking to him recently, and he's a Michigan fan, and he's just bummed right now. Like, he has no idea what to do, because he doesn't even know if there's going to be a season, if it's going to be in the Big Ten. So really a whirlwind in the last 24 hours of college football.
A lot of questions in the air, a lot of stuff being released on Twitter, reports through Twitter, stuff along those lines. So to kind of open up the show and try and hit on as many of these points as we can, we've kind of scoured Twitter, scoured reports and stuff like that, and we're going to go pretty quick, rapid fire, not too rapid fire. We'll talk as much as we want or as little as we want about each of these points, but things we've seen throughout the past few days, try and hit on all of those, give you our thoughts. So we're going to start not necessarily Syracuse or ACC, but this is pretty macro in terms of all of college football. This is a thread that I saw this morning from Chris Owens, who's an offensive lineman at Alabama, and he basically just went through how leadership in NCAA football and the NCAA as a whole has had months to go through and figure out a plan. And now here we are as preseason is starting up for so many of these teams. And there's no plan. And there's a lot of stuff being exposed in terms of logistics are not necessarily thought through and through. So Ben, your thoughts on kind of seeing this outbreak or this statement and then some of the other player statements in terms of criticism moving up. I know there's been so much. You've seen tweets from Trevor Lawrence, Tommy DeVito, stuff along those lines. And there have been so many other guys that have spoken out, some critical, some just saying they want to play. So where are you on in terms of all of these different players speaking up?
First of all, I think regardless of what side you're on, it's good that college athletes have a little more pull today than I think they did even 5-10 years ago. And Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and social media in general, of course, a big reason. But I just think, you know, the center isn't the glamorous position. It's not like Chris Owens, even though he is a very, very good college football player, he's not a huge star. So you wouldn't have heard from him before. So I just think it's really cool that all these guys can speak their mind now. But talking about Owens' statement, I mean, it's hard to disagree with him mm-hmm. because it seems like all these plans came together right now. And I get that it's hard to make these decisions. The situation is ever changing, but for weeks, if not months, near the beginning of the pandemic, we kept just hearing, you know, the NFL, college football, these things are going to happen. And we weren't really hearing how or where or what they were going to do. And I think now it's become a bit of a reckoning because people are realizing that there wasn't much of a plan being formed, or if it was being formed, it wasn't being talked about early enough. And the fact that there had to be late changes, whether you're talking about the ACC recently changing its schedule or even Syracuse, which I'm sure we'll get into a bit, recently changing its testing protocols. These are things that I think make people not have confidence in your system. If you have something like the NBA where they come out with an incredibly robust plan to keep everyone safe and have the games going on and there's plan Bs and Cs and Ds and Es all the way to Z, that's when I think you inspire confidence in your players and the people that work in your industry. So I do think that college football in general, maybe because it's split up in a bunch of conferences and not just one unified body, they really dropped the ball a little bit on pre-planning this.
And one of the big quotes that I took away from the thread, he says, "I don't expect things to be fully resolved, and I understand how hard these decisions are to make. We knew this would be difficult in the fall or in the fall way back in March, but for us to have something to work or but for us to not have something to work with in mid-August is unacceptable." It's been 4.5-5 months that NCAA decision makers, ACC conference, whatever conference you're looking at, there have been 4 or 5 months for you to make these decisions. And it seems like these decisions have been kind of rushed in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. I know there's been limits on, we're hoping more information is released, stuff along those lines that we're going to get a big breakthrough, but you've got to be coming up with something throughout the way. And this is really exposed how there are such big issues with the delegation of power in terms of there is no overarching body. Every conference makes their own decisions. Every school is making their own decisions. There needs to be a little more uniformity. And I think he makes a really good point. And there are other guys, I'm sure, and I know, and I've seen that have agreed with him. And it seems pretty top to bottom that these players just want a plan. They want something that they know, like, this is what it is. And if I disagree with it, I can opt out. I want that to be an option, but I want to see a plan and I want to be able to make the decision that is best for me, but I don't have the information and I don't have the knowledge right now to be able to make those decisions, because each conference seems like it's postponing and kind of delay as much as they can, but you've got to make some sort of decisions, give the players the tentative plan so that they can make what is the best decision for themselves and be able to make an educated decision. And the NCAA and these conferences right now have put their players in a tough spot where they don't have the knowledge to make the proper decision. And that's going to cause a lot of problems moving forward. I think these players just want to know what we can do and what the idea is right now so that they can be able to make a right decision, make a wrong decision, but just be able to know that this is what I know right now and this is how I'm able to make that decision. Because without a little more info and a little bit more, you know, it seems like they're looking into these things, the doctors and medical professionals that are making decisions and helping make these decisions are educating the conference decision makers, but no players are really gaining anything from that information. And I want to start seeing that. And I'm sure there are hundreds, if not thousands, of players that completely agree with Chris Owens, as well as myself, on that.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think there's been a formal decision made about attendance. Like, and I think it's naive to think that there probably would be attendance, but they haven't officially said there isn't attendance.
No.
And that's a major issue.
Yeah, the Carrier Dome was basically told there would be none, but that is a state policy. It had nothing to do with the ACC. It had nothing to do with Syracuse decision-making. That is in place because of what Cuomo said. These other schools, these conferences as a whole, there's been no statement. That it seems like one of the most blatantly obvious changes that is going to have to be made in order for this season to have. And the fact that it's still in limbo right now when they're trying to figure out whether or not it can happen, just make the statement. You know that you're not going to be able to have fans in attendance because it's a logistical nightmare on top of tens of hundreds and maybe even thousands of other logistical nightmares right now in terms of getting this season underway or postponing or canceling or doing something. But whatever decision needs to be made, make the easy ones and move on. Get away from the easy decisions. Let those be made. Get them out in the open. Let the public react. Let the players react. Let the fans react. And then you continue to make your decisions on these bigger things and progress. Make a little progression, but you got to start somewhere and make the easy decisions and make them public right now.
For sure. And if I'm just trying to go inside the mind of a player, if I'm participating this year, there are a couple things I want to know. Attendance is definitely one of them. You know, as you said, Syracuse knows they won't have attendance, but who knows when they play Louisville in the season or anyone else for that matter, who's going to be allowed to be there. You also probably want to know what the testing protocols are, which most schools and conferences have released. You want to know what's going on with school. Are you going to be at school? Are you going to be separated, taking online classes? A lot of guys don't know that. And I think the biggest thing that probably hasn't been outlined is what happens if people start testing positive midseason. Because that's an issue that even some pro sports have not been able to overcome or really solve right now, especially when looking at baseball. And I think that that is a huge issue, is how are we keeping these kids, not only them, but then again, there are thousands of students on campus they could interact with. So how are we keeping everyone in the environment safe? Clearly, you need a plan, and that's why I don't blame anyone if they wanted to opt out of this season, because there's so many unknowns. I think that frustration is just boiling up in players, whether they're on one side or the other. And that's what you saw with Chris Owens, is just upset. He said like 18 to 22 year olds shouldn't have to be yelling or calling on their leaders to make decisions. You know, these are adults, high-ranking officials at prominent universities. They're intelligent people, clearly. I mean, they're educating the youth of the United States. So they have to help out the athletes, because it's a tricky situation right now. And I also think it'll be an interesting eligibility discussion going forward if the season happens, but some people don't play. I'd like to see how the NCAA tackles that, but that's kind of a different tangent we can save for later.
Yeah, to rein it in with Syracuse for a little bit, Stephen Bailey, who we had on a few weeks ago, if you want to listen to his podcast when we interviewed him about Syracuse football recruiting and this upcoming season, the new faces to look at, you can find that on your podcast streaming site, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're getting the Ostrom Avenue podcast. That was a few episodes ago with Stephen Bailey, but he reported earlier this week on Syracuse and the players. They were supposed to start their preseason on Thursday. They sat out their first 2 days of practices to do team meetings and to ask these higher-ups, including, you know, Coach Babers and some higher-ups at the university, questions that they could answer or questions that they want asked. And it seems like it was a pretty productive session, a couple of sessions from the reports. And it seems like the big concerns were not necessarily how Syracuse was handling it, or the COVID-19 pandemic and their policies and their health and safety precautions. But it seemed like they were raising a lot of questions about how these other schools seem to be handling their precautions and their players. And it seems like, I mean, they've got an immediate an immediate success. Their testing numbers were the number of tests that they were going to be administered at Syracuse for these players was increased from once to twice a week. So these players are going to be getting that safety. And it seems like there was a uniform agreement that John Wildack, Syracuse's athletic director, was going to make that pitch to the ACC to make that uniform top to bottom to try and make this as safe for the players, because the more often they're tested, the quicker you can get players out and away from others if they do test positive. But there are a lot of questions still, and it seems like Syracuse, and I'm pretty pleased with what I've seen from them, but it seems like these players and these coaches are really doing everything they can, because they're not getting the answers from the ACC, but these guys seem to be doing exactly what they need to be doing in order to have the safest season possible for the Orange.
Yeah, I think Syracuse is really setting a good example right now for the conference in general. The players, first off, you know, I thought that their protest made sense, the skipping of the practices. It was good, not really detrimental to the team or school. It's only two practices. And they got together with John Wildhack, and everyone was able to iron out a plan that made sense for everyone. And then Syracuse even went to the ACC and asked everyone to step up and double their testing to twice a week as well. I just think the ACC deals with a problem that's slightly unique to them, where they are geographically spread in a way that's different from many other conferences because of some of the realignment and just the fact that they're more north to south, whereas the SEC is kind of clumped into an area, as well as the Big Ten. And the Pac-12 is north-south on the West Coast, but I think the East Coast there's a little more diversity within the people there and the political spectrums that they're on. So I think it will be a bit of a juggle for the ACC, definitely. You know, when you have schools in New York State, Massachusetts, in Virginia, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, everyone's going to have to do a good job of listening to each other and compromising. But I do think it has seemed positive so far. It seems like everyone in the ACC is trying to get together and accommodate the players in the schools to make sure that we can play a season, because I think everyone wants to play. They just want it to be safe. And for some people, that means meeting certain needs that are different from other people. But if everyone can get into a situation where they're comfortable, then I do think that this season can go well. And I think Syracuse is showing that, you know, two sides with opposing views can come together, you know, the players and the athletic department in this case.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be kind of brought out of that, and some of the press conferences and statements we've heard since. Dino Babers said yesterday that the Syracuse football program is safer than the streets of New York, or just living in New York and in general, which is a big statement in terms of how controlled things are for Syracuse. Obviously, we haven't been given numbers, and I feel like a lot of people are asking for numbers, but there haven't been too many specifics. But Babers also said they're doing better than Michigan, and Jim Harbaugh released some pretty, you know, straightforward numbers in terms of where Michigan stood, and some of the highlights from that were zero tests out of their last 353 were positive. So they seem to be on the right track. And in the almost 1,000 tests that Michigan has given out from start to finish, they've only had 11 positives. And a few of those were people coming back where Michigan was entirely out of control. So for Syracuse to say that their numbers are even better than that is a pretty strong statement and a pretty good sign for the policies that Syracuse has put into place and how well the players are doing in terms of following these precautions. And it seems like Syracuse is on the right page, but with all of these questions and where the ACC stands and where different schools stand in terms of geographic locations and state policies that are in place right now, I know I'm relatively well-versed on how Cuomo's policies in New York have impacted Syracuse football, but I'm not exactly sure as much on Southern states and some of these areas that have started to pop up as kind of COVID hotspots in the last few weeks with a decent spurt, like in Florida and some other states down south where they've seen, you know, some issues trying to reopen and some numbers jumping. So whether that will translate into football, into these colleges, I'm not entirely sure. I don't know if anyone can be sure, but it's tough to be able to make these decisions when you've got, you know, state policies are affecting one team and they're not affecting another team. They need the ACC to come out with a broad set of statements. And it seems like this Syracuse meetings, those couple of meetings that they've had with Wildak, who can then in turn go to an ACC committee and make these pitches and make these suggestions and try and get everyone on the same page, could make a lot of strides in terms of making this season as safe for the players as it can be if they do end up playing.
For sure. And I think to go back to the MLB again, it's an issue they have because they were relying on local legislators. And in some places that means very different things than other. I mean, if you have a decent grasp of state politics right now, you probably know that Governor Cuomo in New York and Governor DeSantis in Florida are not exactly aligned on every single issue. So the ACC has to be this common ground where they can say, here's what everyone is expected to do. Because as a player, I would understand if you're from Florida and that's the way you like it, why you wouldn't like the New York way, and vice versa. If you're from New York, you wouldn't like it the Florida way. It's honestly, like, it would be a bit naive for us, I think, to not have any like sweeping ACC rulings on major issues like this. But I hope, because the ACC has released a couple statements, or at least sources from the ACC, because CBS used an unnamed source, so we're not exactly sure who it is, but
yeah.
Hopefully they are confident enough. That means they have a plan coming through, and they just released the schedule recently, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a season that they're releasing some of these health protocols in the next couple days. Because I think every conference that wants to play, or even ones that aren't exactly sure, are in the hot seat right now to do something. I mean, all the news yesterday, and with the Big Ten that you mentioned briefly with Harbaugh, like, there's been a bit of a coaches revolt against some of the reports. The coaches are saying that they want to play, and that'll be interesting to watch too. If the season gets canceled, both Nebraska and Ohio State have mentioned other conferences. A lot to unpack that I just kind of went into there. But in general, that it shows the need. The conferences, I think in the next few days, really not just the ACC, but everyone needs to start making concrete statements. Because whether you're playing or not, athletes need to know right now.
Speaking of statements, we've got one from early yesterday, or actually late yesterday, and Tommy DeVito, Syracuse's quarterback, released his statement in terms of everything going on. And to just kind of, I'll just read the entire thing. From the moment we were sent home in March to returning back to school in June, we were working. After returning to campus, we continued working with one goal in mind, the upcoming season. Regardless of what happens, the countless hours of work have been put in. If the season happens now or next year, the work doesn't stop. We'll push ourselves harder while the goal remains the same, the upcoming season. We'll stay focused and be ready for whatever comes next. And that statement was one of the major statements we've seen from kind of Syracuse players. I know Taj Harris tweeted about his mom working three jobs and how much this season means to him in terms of his development and possible exposure to make the jump to the next level. But there really wasn't anything from Syracuse in terms of the "we want to play" hashtags that you've been seeing from all of these other conferences. So it seems like Dino Babers has kind of got his guys in a situation where they're making public statements, but they haven't necessarily jumped into that entire kind of Power Five statement that you've seen guys like Trevor Lawrence and other big time players from the ACC and other Power Five conferences jump into. Justin Fields jumps off the page as well as someone who's made some statements like with that hashtag. But to see, you know, Syracuse is still making statements like this, but not necessarily with the same hashtags as everyone else is, but still advocating for all of this. And what are your thoughts on seeing, you know, DeVito and his stance that regardless of when they're told they can play, they're working, they're ready to go whenever. So I think another good, you know, another good thing to see out of Syracuse. They seem like they're on the right page and the players are ready to do whatever they need to do, whether it's this year or next year.
I think it was a smart statement. I think I understand certain players wanting to do the "we want to play" hashtag and joining that. And I also understand guys that don't necessarily want to align themselves with that and are open to playing this year postponed, this year on time, or next year. I think what DeVito said is exactly what you want to hear if you're a fan, which is that they're going to be prepared no matter what. Because at the end of the day, to the individual like Tommy DeVito, even though he's the quarterback, this is completely out of his control. He's got, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. And whether they play or they don't play, it's not going to be because of something Tommy DeVito said. So the best thing he can do is use the time right now, prepare like there's going to be a season. And if there isn't, then let's take it the best practice year of his entire career and come back out again for a final year and have the best college year that he could have ever had. I don't know if you can ask much more from Syracuse right now than to just continue practicing. It's probably a bit more difficult for Dino Babers to motivate his guys right now with all the uncertainty, but it's good to hear that they're treating this like it's a regular off season. And until they hear differently, they should treat it like it's a regular off season, because we very well could have football in a month tomorrow, I think, is the opening day of the ACC season, September 12th, I believe. So, you know, you got to prepare because it could happen very soon.
Yeah. Syracuse would open up on the 12th against UNC. We've got schedule talk in a little bit, a couple more points to hit. DeVito made a statement. Jim Boeheim made a statement. Jim Boeheim, I know he's obviously not a college football guy, but definitely a guy with a lot of pull throughout the NCAA and the college sports landscape as a whole, as he's been here for as long as he has. So we're going to let you hear that one. I'm sure some of you have heard it at this point. Some of you might not. We're going to play that quickly and then come back with our reaction and our thoughts from Boeheim's statement.
Well, what I see is with younger people under 25, nobody's dying. Anybody healthy can get sick. 40 to 50% of the cases are probably with no effects. But when you see the football players coming back, and when they initially come back and test positive, that means they got it at home. Since they've been back on campus, these same football players are tested negative and are practicing already with no effects. You see that all over. You see the sports leagues that have started, there's been a couple little disruptions, but for the most part, these got healthy athletes, either asymptomatic or they don't get anything from this disease. And I just don't see why we don't push forward like all the other sports have. And you're talking about college kids that are going back to school, and you're talking about high school kids that are going back to school, because in my mind, this could go on for 2 years or 3 years. Are we just going to stop everything for 2 years or 3 years? I am not a great believer in a vaccine. The flu vaccine still doesn't work. And we've been looking for that for 30 years or so. So I don't see a cure coming. And if there's not a cure coming, are we just going to give up and sit home for the next 2 years?
All right, a lot to unpack there from Boeheim. Ben, initial thoughts on everything you just heard from that 90 seconds of Boeheim.
I'm not going to personally stand by the science of some of his statements, but I understand some of the frustration. He isn't wrong in saying we don't know when a virus is coming, and this could last for multiple years. Some people, the people mostly who don't care about sports, would say, well, then that's fine. Then we shouldn't play sports for multiple years. But we know, as people who follow it religiously, that this has a major impact on a lot of people's lives. I disagree with him that we should try things if we have a plan.
Yeah.
And I also, while I don't exactly agree with the phrasing of how he said it, I do think that in a system where they're constantly tested and controlled, they could be in a better spot than some. It depends on where they come from. Like, that's a very broad statement to say that they would have gotten it at home, because all these guys come from different parts of the country, obviously, and different parts of the world even. But I get why he wants to play, and I don't think that it is ridiculous. But one thing I want to say is he compared it to pro sports, and I'm fine comparing it to pro sports if the plan comes out and the plan is like pro sports. And in my opinion, that's a plan where the athletes are not on campus during their seasons. Mm-hmm. Like where the football players just for the fall semester are off campus or on the South campus of Syracuse.
Yeah.
And they're isolated, taking classes online, only seeing the guys they play football with, for, and against. Mm-hmm. And then you could tell me it's like pro, and I believe you. If they're mixing in 20-person classes or 40- or 50-person classes 4 to 5 days a week, then I don't think this is like pro sports, because pro sports players most of the time are not having that much social interaction. So for the most part, I disagree with a lot of the stuff that's in there, yeah, but some of the overarching themes are understandable.
I mean, coach wants to play. Whether that is him talking for football immediately, but if nothing else, he wants to play basketball this season. So he's released some ideas in terms of timing for that and a way to try and make that a little bit better in the past, but he wants football to happen now. But the big thing that I took away from that is kind of the limbo that everyone is in terms of the NCAA and the players and acknowledging these guys and girls as more than student athletes. And they seem like they're in that tough situation where if these players were compensated for what they're doing in some way, shape, or form, or acknowledged as professionals and, you know, jumped from their amateur status, then this is an easy decision. You can then say, because of that, we're going to bubble. You're going to be confined to whether it's a South Campus apartment, a hotel in the area, whatever it is, you're going to be confined to Syracuse football and Syracuse football opponents. And then you can play, but you're not in that situation. You're telling amateur athletes that you're going to have to put yourself at risk. You're going to have to quarantine for the entire semester, basically going in and out, not see anybody. That's a tough ask for these guys with no reward. And Boeheim talks about how you've just got to treat it like a professional situation. It's not a professional situation. You were mentioning there are so many other factors in terms of these guys going to class. Are they doing strictly online classes? I know a lot of the guys take online classes during the season anyway, just to make their schedules a little bit simpler. But are you telling all players that they can only take online classes? They can only stay in their rooms unless they're going to practice. They can't go out to eat. They can't go to a diner. They can't go to a restaurant. They can't pick up a sandwich. They can't do anything. Are you telling these guys that you're going to do practice and you're going to do work in your room? Like, that's a big ask for these players, on top of you're not going to be in the same situation. You are putting yourself at risk. You're traveling to states where, you know, things might not be as in control as they are in Onondaga County right now. You're traveling to states where, I mean, there are hot spots. Thankfully for Syracuse, Miami's not on the schedule, but Miami has been a troublesome spot. You saw the issues in the MLB. There's a lot of question marks. So for Boeheim to say that these guys are like professional athletes or should be treated like, or the NCAA should come out with a situation like the professional sports, you've got to make that jump, because in order to treat these guys like professionals and put them in the situations that you've seen from the NBA and the MLB and the NHL and the MLS and what the NFL is trying to figure out, you've got to put these guys in a situation where if they're amateurs, you can't be making these asks from them. But if they are in a professional spot, you've got to compensate them somehow in order to make these big asks. And I'm just not sure. I'm not sure that jump is wanted to be made by the NCAA right now, on top of all these other decisions that are going to be made in the next few weeks.
Yeah, this just isn't professional. I mean, this is an issue that I'll bring up right now that can't be solved. But I think it also makes a difference when you're paying a guy, you mm-hmm. know, north of $600,000. And obviously for some like pro players, way more than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're paying someone 6, 7, 8 figures, that's a little bit different of an ask, because yeah, it's their job and there's obviously a lot of compensation you're providing them. I'm not saying that the scholarship to these schools isn't compensation, but it's not equal compensation to that. So it's, the whole situation to me is just vastly different than professional sports. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but I also think you brought up like bubbling. I think bubbling almost has to happen. I mean, if we look at the pro sports that are going on right now, the NBA, NHL, MLB, and even MLS, the ones that are having the least problems are the NBA and NHL in bubbles. The MLS had a little trouble, but they've gotten by it in their bubble. And then it's the MLB who's having the most trouble and are attempting, as a lot of reports are coming out, to go into a bubble for the postseason. So bubble sports seem like the way to go right now. It almost seems like too much trouble to try not doing bubble sports. And maybe, you know, this doesn't mean the whole ACC, like, football players are getting into one hotel, but they're all in their own hotels in their own cities so that they don't come in contact with anyone.
Exactly. You see, the situation that the NCAA is in right now is most similar to the way the MLB is, in terms of these players are told not to go out, not to do anything besides, you know, the essential interactions and practices and games and team stuff, and then just go home and do your quarantining day by day. Whereas the bubble has proven to work. The bubble has done stuff, but you can't really bubble college athletes. You can't do that the same way, and you can't make these asks because of so many other things at hand, because these are student athletes. And if the NCAA continues to acknowledge them as student athletes and nothing more than that, and not, you know, not worthy of being paid or compensated for their work, then it's a tough ask to tell these guys to go into a bubble and quarantine. And it's going to present the issues that the MLB has had. And I think there are even more, you know, situations that could be problematic for Syracuse in terms of, you've got, it's a college environment. You've got people that are still going to be doing their thing and a lot of temptations. And I know these guys want to play and do everything in their power to play, but I live right off campus at Syracuse. There are gatherings basically daily outside, people coming together. You've seen situations at other colleges where athletes are coming together and spreading it quickly. There are going to be rapid spreads if these situations continue and people continue to have these larger gatherings. And if the players get hit, your entire team is hit in a couple of days and your season is done. And if you play a game in that time span, then there's two schools. And I don't need to go into details about how this disease can spread, but it's that quick and it's that simple. You've got one guy, maybe he's a guy that isn't playing as much, or a guy that, it could be DeVito, it could be a walk-on, it could be anybody in the program, it could be an assistant coach or a trainer, anything along those lines that makes that decision. When you're not in a bubble, you don't have that oversight. And for Syracuse or the NCAA or the ACC to have to make this decision is going to be a really tough ask and a really tough situation to do, just because of how easy you can have one guy step out of line and how difficult creating a bubble for these players would be.
If they try and trust everyone to just comply and not put in strict stuff, it's not going to work. Yeah. And this isn't me trying to talk down to college athletes or anything, or even college students. Like, there are about 100 guys on the college football team. They're big rosters. There are 15 teams in the ACC. So there are 1,500 players, not including everyone else that interacts with them. Of those any group of 1,500 people, someone is going to be stupid. Like, there's going to be one person or thoughtless or selfish or whatever you want to call it. Someone out of 1,500, like, it's just the odds. Someone, even if it's accidental.
It doesn't even have to be a stupid decision either. It can be as accidental. Simple as you go to grab your groceries and you come in contact in an unfortunate situation. Yeah. With 1,500 people, and that's players only, you're up north of probably 2,000 when you look at coaches and staff and athletic trainers and different personnel. That's 2,000 people that you're going to say, yes, you're going to be quarantined. But I mean, for 2,000 people to all be in a perfect bubble with different state regulations, different school regulations, different, you know, oversight by coaches, high oversight, not as high oversight. There are so many different variables that this could, you know, it could spread so quickly. One guy. There are so many simple ways that someone could get it. And then your ACC schedule, your all ACC schedule plus one non-conference game gets just tossed into the trash. I mean, it turns into rubbish if that's the situation. So you've got to be able to make these guys make the best decisions that they can in terms of their safety, in terms of team safety, conference safety, but it's hard to do. It is a really tough situation. I'm glad I don't have to make these decisions. I'm glad I don't have to oversee these players to make sure they're doing all of that and to make these asks from players. But you know what? Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to figure this out, and someone's got to start making big decisions, because as you said, we are 30, 31 days away from opening night, opening day, likely for Syracuse rather than night. But it's coming close, and there are a lot of big decisions that need to be made. And I kind of just teased it a little bit, so we might as well just rip right into it. UNC, game one, we're going to take a look at the schedule now, and we kind of hit on it a little bit on Twitter. It's a tough schedule for Syracuse, especially considering the road games, but in a season with no, well, not officially, but in a season theoretically with no fans, you know, a road schedule might not be as difficult as if, you know, you've got these opponents that are going to be, or you know, packing stadiums, hostile stadiums, whatnot, big time programs, but you've got, it could possibly be your toughest five games on the road and your simplest five games on the, or at home in terms of conference play, and then toss Liberty in there.
For sure. It's probably the most lopsided home versus road schedule that Syracuse has had in recent memory. Honestly, I think of the opportunities to win on the road, you have to look in the first 2 weeks. Syracuse starts it out with North Carolina and then Pitt, neither of which are slouches. But if you're expecting to beat Clemson, Louisville, or Notre Dame, then you have seriously high expectations for the Syracuse team. I think it's an interesting schedule for Syracuse, but I think it's one, now there probably won't be bowl games, but let's just pretend, one that could see them go bowling. I think it's a manageable schedule. I think for this Syracuse team, it's not the worst thing to have their five easiest games at home.
No.
It obviously is going to make those upsets a lot harder, but it's, you know, the Georgia Tech game would have probably been a lot more of a toss-up at Georgia Tech. Now it's at Syracuse, and a game like BC as well, which is still definitely a toss-up, is in more of Syracuse's favor. And then Wake, probably the best team Syracuse plays at home, a team that they beat last year in the finale.
Yeah, I think you look, you've got two bye weeks within, so you've got 11 games in 13 weeks, byes after Georgia Tech and before Duke, and then another bye in November after BC, before kind of that tough closing stretch for Syracuse where they go at Louisville, home against North Carolina State, and then at Notre Dame to finish out the season. So a tough final three games. I definitely like the positioning of that last bye week. I think that'll be a really good spot, because they've got to go through, obviously, a couple of tough ACC games in that slate, but those last three games are going to be troublesome for Syracuse. So a really good, a well-timed regrouping bye week, and able to come out in that last stretch strong. But there are two games on here on the road that are just, you know, miserable draws for Syracuse. They're the only team in the ACC who drew both on the road, and that's October 24th against Clemson and December 5th against Notre Dame. Two really good teams, two really good programs, both on the road, both going to be tough matchups for Syracuse. So obviously something that the fans are going to be looking for. Syracuse has shown in the past, not necessarily last year, but the past two seasons before, that they can make those upsets. They've beaten a top Virginia Tech team, a really good Virginia Tech team, and then obviously the Clemson win, which will never die in Syracuse sports talk lore. But you've got those opportunities with Clemson, who's going to be really good, Notre Dame, who's going to be really good, and then a couple of other schools that could make the jump. It's going to be a weird top 25 this season. But who knows? A couple of
it'll,
other
it'll be fun
guys
though,
and as well.
It'll be really fun. I think it's kind of nice to have your toughest games at the end of the season. I mean, yeah, even just looking at just the back half of the schedule, starting October 24th, it goes Clemson, Wake, BC, Louisville, NC State, Notre Dame. BC's not going to be – it's not expected to be great this year.
No.
But there's really not an easy game in there. Like, there's no game that I'm looking at night and I can mark down a W for Syracuse. But that'll be nice, you know, whether the Orange are performing well or not. These games will still be meaningful because Syracuse can play spoiler late in the season in what's probably going to be the best race for the ACC title that we've seen in at least a few years. I mean, there's really been no competition to Clemson in a while, and I still expect the Tigers to be better than Notre Dame, but that's a major player and a team that contends for playoffs that's heading into the ACC right now. So I think that'll be fun when I look at the schedule as a whole, it's a pretty good outlook for Syracuse. I like the bye weeks, as you mentioned. I like that you play Liberty before you play Clemson, so it's a bit of a breather before you go out and play your toughest opponent. And if I'm Dino Babers, you say Clemson, Louisville, Notre Dame. If we win one of those games, that's incredible. Like, you go into every single one. No one's expecting you to win. And you play your heart out and you see what happens. And as you mentioned, Syracuse can upset these big schools. They've done it in the past. I will remind everyone that the last time they played Clemson, they lost by like 40 points. And last time they played Notre Dame, they lost 36-3 during their 10-win season on neutral turf. But
10-win
that season, was a different team.
That showed the difference between, 10-win Syracuse and what the top-tier Notre Dame can do.
I think that was a playoff Notre Dame team. I think that was Book was the quarterback for the Irish, and they were the 4 seed. I had to write an article about that game, and I think I was the only person watching by the end of it, because that was one of the hardest games to watch ever. But
miserable. The Syracuse, they kicked their field goal as time expired. Yeah. So that's a way to walk out with a little celebration, I guess. As much to positively take away from a 36-3 loss.
Yeah. But
you could draw some positives about that Clemson loss. It seemed like,
they were in it for
within striking distance, despite, the scoreboard looking terrible. And
I think it was 41-6.
It wasn't that close, but
yeah.
There were some opportunities where Syracuse could have made it a game, but they've got to be able to do that. And when you look at this schedule and you look at, the ACC right now, there are a lot of toss-up games for Syracuse.
Yeah.
When you kind of just go through the schedule, UNC, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Duke, Wake Forest, BC, they're all obviously, there are some teams better than Syracuse, some teams worse than Syracuse, but they're all toss-ups. And that 10-win season had Syracuse winning the toss-ups. And last year at 5-7, those games that you kind of headed into thinking it would be a toss-up, they didn't go in Syracuse's favor. They didn't have the pizzazz, the momentum, whatever it was, the ability. They were losing the toss-ups last year. So that's the difference. Syracuse could be right around 500. Maybe they could be 6-5 if they win a handful of those toss-ups. I could easily see them at 4-7. I could unfortunately see them at 3-8. I could unfortunately see them at 2-10.
There's not much of a floor.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of possible, possible meltdowns for Syracuse, but they have, it's their fate. They've got a lot of toss-up games. Obviously, they've got tough games as well with Clemson, Louisville, NC State, Notre Dame. They're going to be tougher games, but you've got a lot of toss-up games. And if you can win a handful of those toss-ups, it's going to be a decent season record-wise, and maybe if there are bowls, they're going to be a little bit more generous with what record will get you in, and maybe a 5-6 Syracuse team can jump into a bowl game if they're having a few at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think as I once heard Michael Jordan say, the ceiling is the roof for this team. I really think so. If I had to guess, just looking at this schedule, I marked down like 6 wins. For Syracuse.
Okay.
There were some back and forths, but I gave them a home loss to Wake, but I gave them a road win to Pittsburgh because they're missing Jalen Twyman, a big D tackle that I think is going to hurt them. But I agree with you. I think they're going to win at least 3 personally. Okay. 2 would be tough. Like I think,
well, I'm saying
not obviously, but hopefully Liberty.
I think and 3 I think in
Duke and Georgia Tech are wins.
The conference schedule is where it's tough. I think you can give them 3 when you include Liberty, but
yeah,
I could see them going 2-8 in conference play.
In conference play, that would be my floor for them.
Yes,
and I could see them overall. I mean, I could see them if everything went right, they could win every home game, and then beat like Pitt and if everything really went right, maybe North Carolina too.
I think
that would be
a miracle, basically every time,
but I think 7-3.
Yeah, it could be pretty close to a split of 5-0 or 6-0 at home when you include Liberty and 0-5 on the road.
Because
that seems to be where the tier is. Every time I go through this schedule and try and pick wins and losses, I come out with a different record, which kind of just shows where Syracuse is right now. A lot of those toss-up games, a lot of games that they could win if they come out with the right mindset and the right approach to these games. A lot of games that they could lose if they do the opposite. So it's going to be an interesting season. I remember last season, you know, everyone gave Vegas their crap for setting Syracuse's over under at 5.5, and they won five games. So it's going to be another tough situation. Syracuse is going to be able to jump. They're going to have to jump, but I don't know who can predict where Syracuse ends up this season. We do our best. I'm thinking I'm going to put them at 5-6 is going to be my guess. I think you've obviously got the one win against Liberty. You're going to sprinkle a few more in there. Georgia Tech, BC, I can give them. And then you've got four or five games where I think they could win, they could lose, and that's where they get their last two. So I think they end up at 5-6. That's where I kind of would place most of my eggs if I were to, you know, be betting on an exact record here, but it could be anything. It could be plus minus two, and I would not really think anything too crazy of it in terms of wins and losses on both sides.
So I tried to look up Vegas odds for this year. There isn't a lot out yet, which is understandable. But I found one, and they have our over-under win total. What do you think it is? I think it's including Liberty, by the way.
Including Liberty, I would say that they would have Syracuse at 3.5.
You are underselling the Orange. They were giving us 5.5 in a 12.
5.5 for Syracuse would be
– so if we equate it to this, maybe 4.5, I feel.
Yeah, I think that would lose them. We'll be straight shooters here, and we'll cut it in half. That's for a 12-game season. So for an 11-game season, we'll give Syracuse 5 wins as the over-under.
Okay. Then I think they probably push, honestly.
I think they push.
Yeah, they probably push.
You know, a loss for Vegas, unfortunately. But, hey, it could be anything. I mean, I see them at 5. I see a way they get 6. I see a few ways they get 4. It could be anything, but, you know, a lot of stuff to toss up. And we'll get a little more in-depth in terms of the schedule and specific matchups as we get a little more details as to – how the season's going to happen and when the season will happen, if that September 12th start date is going to be set in stone, if that gets altered at all, pushed back to try and, you know, make the season a little more manageable, spread out a little more. We don't know. There could be a lot of changes by the time we do our UNC preview episode. So we'll see where that ends up. We'll dive a little bit more into the depth of some of these matchups and possibilities and outcomes for the first few games and the entire season as a whole. But I think that's going to wrap us up for today. We had a lot to talk about. We talked about a lot. We got into some stuff in terms of our thoughts on, you know, how this season can be played and looking into other thoughts, Chris Owens, Tommy DeVito, Stephen Bailey, Jim Boeheim. We've got a lot of different thoughts and ideas that we were able to talk about. And then obviously the schedule. So lots to unwind. Hit us up on Twitter with any of your thoughts. If you disagree with what we had to say in terms of any of these topics, at Ostrom Avenue Pod, give us a follow, give us a reply. We had a great back and forth last week or a couple of weeks ago in terms of Syracuse recruiting for basketball with one of our guys on Twitter. And so a lot of fun. We could be having some good conversations. Let us know what you disagree with. Let us know what you agree with. Let us know if there's anything else you want us to look into, at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. And then wherever you get your podcasts, give us a review, give us a rating. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. But I mean, hey, there was a lot to talk about this week. I'm sure there's going to be more to talk about as more information pops up. So we'll leave you at that. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. It's been a lot of fun talking about, you know, what we do know at this point, because there could be a lot of switches by the time we jump on for the next time. So thank you very much for listening. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Stay safe. We'll catch you next week.